Is that a yes from Stuart?
Yep.
Thank you. Well, good evening. Welcome to tonight's council meeting. My name is Paula Reed, Mayor of Kingborough. It's my pleasure to welcome you all to tonight's meeting on Monday the 3rd of November 2025. Welcome to everyone who's in the public gallery this evening and to those who are at home watching along on YouTube. It's 5:30pm and I now officially declare the meeting open. Council now operates under the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulations of 2025. Under these, I'm required to advise you that an audio or audiovisual recording is being made of the meeting. All persons attending the meeting are to be respectful of and considerate towards other persons attending the meeting, and language and conduct at the meeting that could be perceived as offensive, defamatory or threatening to a person attending the meeting or listening to the recording is not acceptable. The audio recording of council meetings is made publicly available on our website and meetings are live streamed on YouTube. I'll now ask staff to confirm that the audio recording has started. Thank you. I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, pay my respect to elders past and present, and acknowledge today's Tasmanian Aboriginal community. Our attendees this evening, from the councillors, we have myself, Councillor Reid, Deputy Mayor, Councillor Gladewright, Councillor Antoli, Councillor Bain, Councillor Dean, Councillor Fox, Councillor Midgley, and Councillor Street. From our staff this evening, we have the CEO, Mr. Stuart, Director of People and Finance, Mr. Spinks, Director of Governance, Recreation and Property Services, Mr. Smee, Director of Engineering Services, Mr. Mackey, our Communications Lead, Ms. Adams, our Communications Officer, Mr. Heather, and our Senior Customer Service Officer, Ms. Jones. We have two apologies this evening, one from Councillor Cordova and the second one from Councillor Richardson. We're now on page one and I'm looking for a mover and a seconder that the minutes of the open session of Council Meeting number 18, held on the 20th of October 2025, be confirmed as a true record. I've got a mover in Councillor Fox and a seconder in Councillor Bain. All those in favour? Against, the motion is carried. Now on page two, workshops held since the last council meeting. We had a workshop on the 27th of October 2025. It had two parts to it. One was in relation to our strategic plan and the second part of it was in relation to councillor numbers. Takes us to declarations of interest. Does any councillor have a declaration of interest to share? No, thank you very much. And still on page two, is there any item on the agenda that a councillor would like to transfer from closed into open session or open into closed session? No, thank you very much. Questions without notice in the public. Does any member of the public who's here with us this evening, would you like to ask a question? If so, if you could come to the lectern, please, and just state your name and the suburb in which you live and then ask your question. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. My name is Karen Groves. I'm from Snug. At the council meeting held on the 21st of July this year, Nick Street reiterated several times that the community should talk to the TPC about their properties.
Sorry, just to correct you, Nick, yep. You've got the wrong street. It's yep. Councillor Christian Street.
Thank you.
Nick Street is the former Minister for Local Government.
Thank you. Off.
All right, moving on. We don't want to create a few.
I do apologise.
You can all make your own judgment on that. Apologies to interrupt you, but I thought it was important we get that right.
Get that right. The more attractive Christian Street reiterated several times that the community should talk to the TPC about their properties and ask for a hearing. At this stage, representations had been closed for 6 months. Not one person in leadership or the planning department corrected this mistake, and the TPC subsequently had so much correspondence they placed a red banner on their website stating that no unsolicited correspondence would be accepted or representations. Would you agree that council silence at the meeting was misleading and has contributed to the misinformation that exists in the community?
The CEO.
Through you, Mayor. The decision-making of the Planning Commission about, their willingness to engage or not engage with subsequent representations is a decision for them. Sorry if that's too quiet. It's a decision for the Planning Commission about whether or not they accept new representations, not speaking for Councillor Street, but I think the intent was to make sure that the community's feedback was reaching the people that could ultimately make a decision as to whether or not they engage further.
Do you have a further question?
Yes, I have another question.
Thank you.
Similar to the current community feedback around the LPS process, Kimberley Council seems prone to some complaints around their lack of communication and consultation. In the last 10 quarterly published complaint summaries, there were complaints of this type every time, and 7 of the 10 final statements hoped to improve communication processes. Since the last council meeting and Mercury article where council decided to hire a consultant, there has been no whole of council communication about anything relating to the hire, TPC Direction 69 or community participation. So going forward, what are some of the ways that KC will be improving communication with the community, and when is this going to start?
Thank you. We do have a plan that is about to roll out, and there is additional information on our website that has been on there since the meeting of the 20th of October, but I'll ask the CEO to address that.
Thank you. Through you, Mayor. So like the Mayor said, there is communication that is planned to go out to the community. So there's a letter that's been drafted that will include further information about the subsequent processes that Council is engaging in. Additionally, it has fact sheets and information that will be sent out to all people that have property that is in any way impacted or potentially impacted by the landscape conservation zone. Additionally, we have launched a new, I guess, campaign to get people to sign up with email addresses so that we've got a much more adaptive methodology for communication, because sending letters is slow, time-consuming and expensive. So finding a way to communicate digitally with our community, especially on these targeted topics, is a way that we can really improve the level of communication and engagement we have. In regard to the element around the consultant, so we've been engaging with an EOI process so far, so an expression of interest, to make sure that we understand who in the market in Tasmania is available for engagement in that piece of work. Additionally, we're just looking at whether or not we need to go further afield with that expression of interest process and subsequent tender as well. So when there's some concrete information, we'll be sure to be communicating that with our wider community.
Okay, so just to clarify, the information will be coming through, it is maybe on the website already, will be coming in a letter and email. Is that correct?
So, through you, Mayor.
Me.
Yeah.
Just speak.
We've had a conversation about not saying through you anymore, to try and be a bit more modern. The intent is that the first piece of communication comes out through that letter to make sure that we're reaching all the people directly. So that's the first step. And then once we've got email addresses, that we'll have that more adaptive methodology of communicating to our community. There isn't any information on the website at the moment around the consultancy, because there isn't anything to tell in regard to that yet. Once we do have some more information, we'll be sure to be sending that via the appropriate communication channels, whether that be social media, the website, and or email as well.
My last question for anyone. In the latest Mercury article on the LPS process, the Mayor stated, "I'm confident we can deliver an appropriate balance for our community." The Strelis also asks for balanced management of development, with principles 4.2 including intergenerational and social equity, and yet the draft LPS and S35F reports seem to favour environmental protections, such as moving properties into discretionary zones and extending overlays to protect landscape values. To ensure a balance, could you provide examples to us where the draft LPS has actively supported or protected the rights of ratepayers to maintain reasonable and continuous use of their properties across generations?
I'm not sure if the CEO can assist us. We might have to take that on notice. We don't have our Director of Development with us here this evening. She is away on leave. CEO?
Yeah. I can't give you exact examples at the moment. If you look across the wider LPS for Kingborough, you'll see many examples of where existing land use is retained through that. The challenge we've had with the environmental living zone in particular is that there isn't a directly equivalent zone under the Tasmanian planning scheme. So at a general comment, that's the challenge we've had there. But in terms of the detailed question, I'll take that on notice.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to ask a question? Please come to the lectern. Thank you.
Hello, my name's Janet De Hoog. I'm from Lower Snug.
So, how do you spell your surname, please?
Small D E space capital H double O G.
Thank you. Just so that we get it right for the minutes, we spelt somebody's name incorrectly last time. We apologise, so I just thought we'd double check. Thank you.
This is my first time here, so I'm a bit nervous.
That's okay, we're friendly.
Okay. Our family property, it's 10 hectares, is proposed by council to be changed to landscape conservation zone with a new planning scheme. It was neglected and uninhabited for several years prior to our purchase. It's overrun with Spanish heath. It's got thousands of pine trees. It's got pampas grass galore. And we're in the process of rehabilitating the land. My question is, if the property is changed to LCZ, will we be able to continue to sensitively burn to manage the weeds and reduce the bushfire risk?
The CEO.
Through you, Mayor, I'll need to take...
It's a habit hard to break.
We'll need to take that on notice so I can get you a detailed and accurate response to that. However, bushfire mitigation around a home is generally still accepted under the landscape conservation zone. But like I say, I'll make sure that our experts are able to respond to the question for you so you get a full response to it.
I don't understand all this. How does a question get answered through?
So what we do is if we don't have the level of detail that obviously you're seeking for your individual property, then we print the answer in the next agenda. So there'll be a written answer in there. And then if you have any further questions after that, you can always come to a subsequent meeting and ask further, or you can just call one of our staff members and ask for clarification.
Okay. Yeah, because some of my questions are following on from that.
Yep.
So just let me have a look at this then.
Feel free to still give, if you think they're still detailed ones, it's quite okay for you to still continue to ask them and we'll just say we take them on notice.
Okay. So currently we personally determine the best time and weather for burning sensitively. We register the burn, and if we needed, we obtain a fire permit from TasFire. If the property becomes LCZ, is that still what we need to do, or is there added things that we need to do if we are allowed to burn?
The CEO, not through me.
Yeah, exactly. Look, I'll need to take that on notice again. My understanding, again, is that the application of the zone doesn't change your ability to undertake that sort of fire and risk management. But again, we'll provide an answer in the next agenda on that question for you.
Because some of the, like a lot of our bushfire risk isn't close to our house. Our house is in the middle of a paddock. A lot of the bushfire risk is just the build-up in the actual bush with the pine trees and the Spanish heath. So it's outside the hazard management area.
Thank you. And a third question?
Just got to decide which one to do. I'll go to a different subject then. So currently we cut down dead trees and limbs on our property for firewood for our wood heater. It keeps us warm in winter and it also reduces the fire load for bushfires. My question is, under the LCZ, will we still be able to cut down trees on our property to use as wood for our wood heater?
The CEO.
Again, I'm sorry I can't answer that question directly. So we will answer that through the next... agenda for you, so I'll take that on notice.
And just because you've indicated you've got some other questions, you can actually go onto our website and lodge those as questions, questions on notice, and then that would be printed in the next agenda as well.
Okay. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who'd like to ask a question? Please come to the lectern.
Hi. This is my second time. I'm still very nervous.
That's okay.
I'm Tamika Adkins and I'm from Manuka Road, Oyster Cove. So my questions relate to landscape valleys and overlays, which I guess may actually have to go unnoticed tonight, but I will ask anyway. So landscape conservation zone was introduced to protect areas of high scenic value and environmental value, which I support in principle. However, the way it's currently being applied or proposed to be applied, especially when combined with biodiversity or scenic overlays and SAPs, means that most development applications, even for minor residential or rural buildings, default from permitted to discretionary. And this creates significant barriers for ordinary landowners, additional time, consultants' reports, the visual ecological bushfire reports, and often the addition of a binding Part 5 agreement. My question on that is, given that landscape conservation zone already includes stringent controls on vegetation clearance and development visibility, what is the planning justification for applying additional overlays that trigger discretionary assessments or otherwise for otherwise low impact or permitted uses? So, in other words, how does Council ensure that cumulative regulatory layering is proportionate to the actual landscape values present on each property and not simply a duplication of existing LCZ provisions?
Thank you. CEO.
I would need to take that question on notice. It's worth noting that the elements within the draft LPS are still proposed at this stage. So I guess the zoning and the overlays are two separate things. And so I take your point around the sort of cumulative impact of zones and overlays, but they do through necessity stand alone from one another, but we'll make sure we get a full answer to you on the next agenda.
Thank you. A further question?
Yes. The term landscape value is repeatedly used across reports, zoning rationales and officer assessments as justification for both the application of the LCZ and for requiring that discretionary uses demonstrate compatibility to those values. However, neither of the state planning provisions nor the Kimberley local provision schedule provide a clear or measurable definition of landscape values. Councillors have previously confirmed the lack of definition. Without a clear definition, both applicants and assessors are left to interpret landscape values subjectively, and that introduces inconsistency and uncertainty in the assessment process. So LCZ specifically requires that discretionary use must have regard to the landscape values of the site and surrounding area. But if those values aren't defined, applicants can't reasonably demonstrate compliance and councils can't objectively determine it. So my question is, how can a development application be assessed as compliant with landscape values when the term is not clearly defined or consistently applied within the Tasmanian planning scheme, the state planning provisions or council supporting documentations?
Thank you. The CEO.
Thanks for the question. So you're right. It is hard when there isn't a consistent defined set of criteria around landscape values, and it's one of the challenges ultimately in defining how zones are applied because there isn't necessarily the state prescribed criteria around it. So I acknowledge your point. In terms of the detail of the response, I'm really sorry, but I'll need to take that on notice again so that the team who are the experts in this area can provide a response there.
Another question?
Yes, my last question is around the minimum lot size. So the minimum lot size is 50 hectares, which is 140-something acres, with a potential reduction to 20 hectares in limited circumstances. Is a fundamental component of LCZ and reflects the zone's intended purpose, which is to manage large, predominantly undeveloped landscapes with limited subdivision potential. Applying landscape conservation zone to existing smaller rural or semi-rural lots is inconsistent with the zone purpose statement under the state planning provisions, which states LCZ is intended for large areas of contiguous natural landscape rather than fragmented or semi-developed lots. We have so many smaller properties that already sit within the rural zone, living zone, and are further constrained by overlays and subcategories which already ensure careful management of vegetation and landscape characters. So rezoning smaller properties to LCZ therefore offers little or no addition to conservation benefit, but significantly increases regulatory burden, preventing reasonable subdivision, triggering more discretionary applications, and reducing land value use and flexibility. And my question is, why is Council proposing to apply LCZ to land parcels that do not meet the minimum lot size requirement of the zone, and how can these smaller properties be assessed under a zone whose minimum area standards they cannot meet?
The CEO.
Through the work that is about to kick off with the consultant, we are going to be reviewing the application of the landscape conservation zone, and I guess looking at the criteria that have been used, the decision making flow, the decision tree, I guess, around the process. So I acknowledge that the point that you're raising, and am not able to provide the detailed response to the why of that myself, but I do note that there is a subsequent piece of work that will relook at that again, so test some of those elements and assumptions that you have mentioned there. So I'll take the rest of it on notice, but just acknowledge the fact that there's a subsequent piece of work coming.
The consultant will be made aware of, obviously, the land size plots that are currently being looked at that will not meet that minimum requirement.
So the consultant will be looking at all elements of the strategic drivers for zoning of land and the criteria that are used, and that includes the lands, the plot size.
Thank you. Any further questions? Please come to the lectern.
Good evening. Kim Phillips from Margate. And you may have just answered this, but I'm going to ask just for clarity. When the consultant is undertaking that review, will they be reviewing all properties that have been flagged for LCZ or only those which have had a representation raised?
Mr. Stewart.
So the scope of works that we have prepared includes, different angles that we look at it. So first of all, it includes, as per the Direction 69 that we received from the Tasmanian Planning Commission, the properties that had been proposed for the particular purpose zone. Additionally, it states all other landscape conservation zone.
Thank you. Okay, so the other question that I have is, how will Council ensure fairness and affordability for landowners? This is if LCZ comes about. Because of the combination of LCZ controls and overlays means that most applications will require costly specialist reports and lengthy discretionary assessments, even for low impact or permitted uses. I ask that question because one of the reasons we live where we live is because I couldn't afford to buy property closer in town. So I'm going to get upset. So the idea of having all of these extra expenses makes everything so expensive, and I feel like it just has not been considered. Sorry.
It's all right. I'm sorry that you're upset. Do you need a moment?
No, that's it. But that, I mean, essentially that's my question.
Sure. CEO.
In the application of the LPS and the zones there, the consideration of the cost fundamentally of going through that process unfortunately isn't a consideration in that. It's about the appropriate allocation of zones. So there isn't a consideration from that side of things. From within council though, what I'm looking to do and see is how we can look at our processes within the organisation to make these processes as easy and user-friendly as possible. So what I'm saying is there will still be criteria under a scheme, and that's our statutory obligation to adhere to a scheme and go through a process around that. What we can do though is try and make ourselves easy to work with and approachable in that, and so there's a test of reasonableness about whether different consultants' reports and things like that will be necessary. I can't give you any sort of surety around individual cases. That's not something I can do here. But what I can talk about is a general intent to be able to be working in the planning space to make ourselves easier to work with and make sure that the cost barrier to these types of things is minimised wherever possible.
Thank you. Any further questions, please come to the lectern.
Joel Hodson, Middleton. I've been looking at the strategic plan for Kingborough. Apologies. In the additional objectives, priority three, caring for where we live and preparing for the future, it talks about bushfire mitigation, and there's a few points there.
Sorry to interrupt. Can I just clarify? Are you talking about our current strategic plan or the one that
is... In the agenda.
Unfortunately, it's not permitted to ask questions about items that are on tonight's agenda because it can prejudice the discussions that councillors need to make in the meeting. So it does state that in the front of the agenda.
Yeah,
I apologise.
Give me a minute, I'll rephrase.
Okay. There's always a way around these things. It's like when you want to make a statement, you can always rephrase it into a question somehow. You just got to put why or what at the end of it and an inflection in your voice and it makes it into a question. Are there any other questions? Thank you. Good evening.
Sorry, Ted Hale, Tinderbox Road, Tinderbox. With regard to the hiring of the independent planner that's been discussed, can you give us a time frame as to when that person may begin, bearing in mind that it's now early November and that report is supposed to be before the TPC in late January?
Yep, the CEO.
Are you, Mayor?
No.
Bad habit. So the scope of works is prepared. We've undertaken an EOI, as I mentioned earlier in the council meeting. I'm just looking at whether or not we need to go further afield to broaden the pool of people we have tendering for the works. But the intent is that the scope of works requesting for a tender will be released this week. And so I think we've allowed until mid next week from memory for the return of that. Then from there, it's dependent on the consultant availability fundamentally for when they're prepared to start that work. But obviously, given the timeframes we have and the commitment to the TPC around the conclusion of that work, we've got some really tight timeframes to be able to go through, to be able to engage that work, undertake it with good due diligence and process, and then produce an output by the 30th of January.
Further question?
Yeah. Second question, there's been discussion or points raised about fire safety to do with trees. There's another safety issue to do with trees, and I highlight probably Tinderbox Road as a really good example. The recent winds we had, I'm aware of two large trees that came down across Tinderbox Road, but there's a very large amount of overhead branches, many of which are dead and quite heavy, which are inevitably going to hit the road. So what is Council's policy about clearing overhead? Because there's certainly a potential for a fatal accident and major problems if that's not attended to.
The CEO.
Look, I'll take that on notice to come back to you. I'm aware of, obviously, the risk that exists with overhanging branches and the risk of failure in terms of that, our tree canopy. But I'll get an answer from the relevant team to come back to you about the detail of that.
Thank you. Do you have a further question?
Yeah. also in relation to Tinderbox Road and the environment along the road. There's a number of areas where the bush actually comes right to the very edge of the road. There are a number of signs along there sort of asking drivers to be aware of the local animals, etc. But I'd suggest that bushland coming right to the very edge of the road is not really helping the animals, because one step sideways, they're going to be under a car. So I think they need to have, we need to have a look at trying to get a little bit more clearance, not to mention the damage for various individuals' cars if they hit a kangaroo that jumps out of there.
The CEO.
Thanks for that.
Or the Director of Engineering. No, no, no. Okay, sorry. I thought you were moving towards your microphone. CEO.
Look, we will do a review of not a formal documented review, but we'll ask the works team to do a drive through Tinderbox Road to have a look at the gap between the bushland and the road reservation and have a look to see whether that's safe or not. So thanks for raising it, and I'll ask the team to do some work on that.
Thank you. Mr. Hodson, are you ready to come back? Because I did have an idea, because you could actually put the question on notice and then you can still ask your original question. Just a thought, but over to you.
Okay, brilliant. Joel Hodson, Middleton. Woodbridge School is growing. There's definitely a larger range of families moving into the South Channel area. Some of those students would be coming from out of area, but there's also within area. What ways are council planning to encourage organic growth of the South Channel region in particular that doesn't involve simply waiting for current residents to move out of existing homes?
The CEO.
So strategic land use planning also includes consideration of where growth areas will occur. So that happens in a number of different ways. The Southern Tasmania Regional Land Use Strategy is the principal one. Kingborough Council has some work to do as well around considering the strategic growth areas that exist within our municipal area. Growth isn't always the best option. So there's going to be areas of Kingborough where growth is not necessarily being encouraged because of cost of infrastructure, the lack of available land and services to support those more people living within an area. So without speaking to the specifics of Woodbridge in particular, what we need to be doing across our municipality as a whole is looking at the overall land that we have within our community, the level of infrastructure and support that exists in different communities, and thinking about where growth can be realistically undertaken, and areas where maintaining sort of a status quo in terms of the number of people living in that area is appropriate. If I think about significant growth in a low population area at the moment, it will often mean additional roading infrastructure, stormwater infrastructure from other organisations like TAS Networks and TAS Water, etc. So there's a number of implications that come with growth in population that need to be factored into any long-term planning around intensification of population.
Follow-up question?
If people want to live in an area, though, shouldn't services cater to those people rather than people being constrained by services as to where they live?
CEO.
Within reason, that's a valid concern. In saying that, as a local government authority, we need to make sure that the affordability and deliverability and the livability for people within those communities can be maintained. the cost of roads, the cost of stormwater and those sort of things. And it's not just a cost implication, but I'm using that as an example, are all important considerations. And ultimately, the desirability of living in an area isn't always going to be the primary consideration in how intensification and densification of population can occur. It is obviously consideration of desire is one element of that, but it's not the whole equation.
Further question, Mr. Hodson?
I strongly don't believe that roads are being, in particular, are being maintained to standard at the moment, and I've had conversations with other landholders who share this opinion. What future plans does council have to, this relates to bushfire mitigation, what future plans does council have to, for instance, make it easier for homeowners to get things built and clear fire hazards, particularly when there's a conflict between, let's say, Part 5 agreements, conservation covenants, and being able to manage our land?
The CEO.
I'm just trying to follow that question.
I went in a few places.
Yeah. So you might have to try me again, sorry.
Maintaining roads and being able to is one way that we can, that we need to have in order to help maintain properties and mitigate bushfire risk. What are some other ways that council are planning to help mitigate these bushfire risks on people's land?
The CEO.
Does that help?
It does help. So, look, the primacy of minimising bushfire risk on privately owned land is with the private land owner around their keeping their property safe for themselves and having a plan. So we work with our community on preparation, thinking about what they need to be doing for summer to make sure that they're ready for bushfire season and putting appropriate plans in place. We don't have a direct responsibility of bushfire preparedness on individual private land parcels, but we do have that wider duty of care to be informing people. We do we've got the abatement notices that we serve where we do have a concern about the risk of bushfire occurring on private land. So there's a number of things that we do in that space, but again, the primacy of bushfire preparedness does sit with the individual land holders.
Thank you. It is three. But please do put that other one on notice. Thank you. Further questions? Good evening.
Good evening. Marcus Redeker, Howden. I think this has been covered, but with progression on the independent consultant, did we say mid-next week? We'd be finding out an outcome
The CEO. I'm not sure he was that specific. I think it was an approximate.
I will need to take that on notice if you want an absolute date for when we'll close the tender. Obviously, there's a couple of drivers here. The first of all is making sure that we get appropriately skilled person on board to do this work. So I might have to flex timelines associated with that to make sure that we do get the right consultant on board. The other imperative is obviously cost and making sure that we have appropriate value for money in that. So I don't want to put a final date on that unless we have to flex things to be able to make sure that we meet those two imperatives. But I'll take the question on notice about the close date of that tender.
Thank you. Further question?
Second question, and again to the CEO. When this person is appointed, they will be looking at zoning and plot size. Will they also be looking at the overlays suggested on those plots and zones?
The CEO.
So the intent is that they look at all the drivers around the zoning application of the properties that are currently proposed for landscape conservation zone or the particular purpose zone. The intent of that work is focused on the zone, not the overlays.
Mr. Redgar, another question?
Last question.
Thank you.
And I'll leave you alone.
That's okay.
As a question to all of you, Mayor, Deputy Mayor and councillors, did you receive, or should I ask, did you not, Charlie Biggins's well thought out and brilliantly written letter addressed to all of you, talking about the LCZ versus the rural living and bushfire problems extending from that?
I can't speak on behalf of all councillors, but certainly I did receive that this morning, I believe, or it might have come in over the weekend, but I read it today, and I'm sure others have received it, and if not having read it so far, will be doing so in the next few days as their schedules allow. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions? No. Thank you very much for your attendance this evening and for your questions. We will move on. We're now on questions on notice from the public. If you wish to submit a question on notice, you can do so. This is my little infomercial. You can do so by completing the relevant form on Council's website or by emailing us at kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au. We do have some questions on notice that are printed in the agenda. The first one was zoning from Ms. Dewhurst and an officer response from Ms. Shakuti. The second one on page 3 was about individual engagement on rezoning from Ms. Duplass and a response from Ms. Shakuti. The next one was on consultation for rezoning from Mr. Barta and a response from Ms. Shakuti. The next question was about approvals to rebuild after fire from Mr. Marshall with a response from Ms. Shakuti. The next one was in relation to absence of house plans asked by Mr. Woolley with a response from Ms. Shakuti. Next one was in relation to rural zones from Ms. Kerr with a response from Ms. Shakuti. Then we had a question on page 6, roadside spraying from Mr. Punch with a response from Mr. Jones. A question in relation to road reserves from Mr. Hodson with a response from Mr. DeCrew. And finally, a question on road maintenance also from Mr. Hodson and a response from Mr. Jones. Takes us to page 7, questions without notice from councillors. Does any councillor wish to ask a question without notice? I've got Councillor Midgley and then Councillor Rantoli. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I just have one question. With the engagement of the consultant in review of the LCZ and the provision of the draft local provision schedule, is there any mechanism for landowners who have not previously provided a representation to do so now?
CEO.
So, as was discussed with the question earlier tonight, there's no mechanism at the moment for a formal representation that goes through to the Tasmanian Planning Commission. In the work undertaken by the consultant, that's not part of the scope that we have at the moment, but I'll take that on notice because it might be something that we discuss in the building the approach that the consultant takes around how they want to gain the information to be able to make the decisions that they, or they provide the advice that they need to. So I'll take the second part of that on notice.
Thank you. Any more questions? No. Councillor Rantoli.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd just like to flag, I do actually have a question as well during closed session that I'd like to ask with your permission,
thank
please.
You. Thank you.
I'd like to ask two questions. The first is a topical one that came up in the newspapers on the weekend about a poison known as 1080, which is used to handle rodents, animal infestation. Is that a poison that we use in council, and do we have a position on that if we do?
The CEO.
I've just been informed that we don't use it ourselves within council.
I ask why we don't use it. Not that I'm encouraging you to use it, I just generally would like to know why we don't.
The CEO.
It's not something I've been involved around the decision making around that pesticide. I can take that on notice for you.
Yeah,
Councillor Antoli, further question?
Yes, one more. So I'm asking this next question on behalf of Councillor Richardson, who is an apology tonight. He has a question through a constituent, through himself. At the last council meeting, Councillor Dean asked the CEO if the council could write to the TPC and request that the TPC allow residents who were unaware of the zone changes, I believe around the LCZ zone, zone changes to their property and therefore miss the deadline to be able to request one now. So the question is an update on what's been the follow through on that, if anything.
The CEO.
I haven't done that yet, so I'll ensure that, that communication goes out this week.
Thank you. Any further questions? Yep. The Deputy Mayor.
Thank you. Just regarding that letter, is there any reason why we couldn't post it on our social media so it could be shared around the community?
The one that Councillor Antoli just asked about. The request to the TPC.
Requesting.
No, sorry, I meant the letter that's going out to the rest of the community.
Oh, sorry, I thought you were talking. That was
sorry. Yeah, that's okay. Bad. Communication.
So yes, the intent is to publish that letter through other council channels, including our website, so it's available to all our community when it goes out.
So it's not only going to be addressed in an envelope, it can also be shared on social media, acknowledging that that's often a way that people receive their information these days.
Correct. So the intent is that it will be emailed out to any property that has an association with the landscape conservation zone, so that it even includes a small portion of the property that might have an edge that landscape conservation zone cuts across. So that will be a number of properties, and it might even be properties that are predominantly zoned another zone, but in addition we'll post it on other channels so that it's available to our wider community and not just going to a certain subset of the population.
Thank you. Any further questions from councillors?
No. Okay, thank you very much. We'll move on. And questions on notice and councillors. At the time the agenda was compiled, there were no questions on notice and councillors. Taxes to petitions still being actioned. There are no petitions being actioned. And at the time the agenda was compiled, there were no petitions that had been received. Moving on now to officers' reports to councils. We've got reform to council numbers and allowances with a recommendation on page 10. And I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. The mover in Councillor Midgley and a seconder in Councillor Bain. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, I'm happy to move this agenda item, the local government review and changes of council numbers and allowances. On the whole, I agree with the comments that have been put forward. I feel it's a positive step to perhaps towards further changes for councils. As we know, there are a large number of councils in Tasmania, and perhaps this might do a further step towards reviewing that again. Our proposal is to move from, we currently have 10 councillors to 9, and there is also a percentage in the councillor allowance. But noting also in that, which I'm not entirely happy, is that this will become at a cost to ratepayers. I did actually chat to the Chief Financial Officer in regards to what percentage we could look at reducing this amount so it didn't become an extra cost to our budget. But after some discussions, it could get quite complicated because this framework is across like all of the local government areas, and if we're tweaking here and tweaking there, moving forward it could become quite complicated. But I did have thoughts to that. But then I guess if we are reducing those numbers, there could be some other cost savings in the long term in regards to other expenses and things like that. But I do acknowledge also that some of the smaller councils, so just to let the public know that there has been discussions in regards to this and sort of input, and so I've sat on a couple of those discussions, and some of the other smaller councils have found that in regards to the numbers being down to 5, it can be a bit more challenging. I just wanted to acknowledge that and know that I heard that. But I hope as well that perhaps with these changes in allowances, with the cost of living, that perhaps it does encourage a few more community members to consider standing in the future. And I do encourage those community members to do that. It's a great way to work for the community. But yeah, and also to note that if you do feel passionate about this reform and this new framework put forward, that you can also put in an individual submission. But yep, on the whole, I agree with what has been put forward.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Further contributions? Councillor Fox.
Sorry, I'm automatically pressing that button.
Old habits die hard.
I don't support this motion. As I said in the workshop, I feel that reducing the number of councillors, and I'm talking about across the state, I think is a loss of community representation and a dilution of democratic involvement. It favours incumbents, it doesn't favour new faces coming on council and not young people. That might not be the case in Kingborough's situation, but it might be. I'm also concerned that this is going to reduce the diversity of gender around the table and age across the table, and also culture, like multiculturalism. It'll be harder for those people to get elected, because I think having just introduced compulsory voting across Tasmania, it's very difficult for people to get elected if they're not members of a political party or aligned with a political party. This situation will be disadvantaging independent community-minded residents, and council will become, and already is, I think, a stepping stone for politicians for both state and federal elections. It disadvantages community members with local knowledge and experience and with a long-term horizon that stand for council and want to make long-term improvements, and people with connections within local communities. Moving on to the suggested salary increase, I think in our case, it is, in fact, this government is aiming to attract professional people with full-time jobs. But in our case, financially, this decision will not actually break even for council, but actually increase our cost by $10,228 per annum. Councillors are not meant to be professional employees. Although we are expected to participate in training, we're not meant to be professional. We're meant to be guided by our professional staff in our decision making. I guess my final comment is that by reducing the number of councillors, particularly in small councils, might actually make those councils less viable and might actually lead to amalgamation by stealth. So I'm afraid I don't support this motion. I feel quite concerned about it. I feel that the feeling of local government is being eroded. The respect for community members representing their constituents on council is changing rapidly. It might be for the better in some people's opinions, but in my historical time on council, I don't see this as a good trend. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Any further comments? Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. I do support the motion. I believe from my conversations in the community, it's quite popular. I actually haven't encountered anyone in the community that is against the idea of reducing the number of councillors. Some of them don't like the fact that it proposes that councillors would get a pay rise. That's just a matter of opinion. I think it's a good move for councils to have fewer elected members that they have to train, that they have to take account for. I respect Councillor Fox's capacity to hold her views. There were a few of them that I actually agree with. One of them that I don't agree with is that it will favour people who come from a party. We only have two individuals who are elected under the banner of a party. We have all various party or non-party relationships. Some of us are here. I know that I'm definitely not here because of a party. And I as a first timer, I came on with a pretty high vote. My view is that if you're an incumbent right now in Kingborough, you're at a disadvantage at the next election. I don't believe incumbency is actually going to save you at all or be a political advantage at the elections in October in 2026. And I think we will see quite a number of new recruits put themselves forward because they're not happy with the way certain things have been handled. Right or wrong, they're not happy. So I do believe that having a threshold that is raised to enter into public life is a good idea, and I believe it's the sort of service that an individual who has capacity, who has reputation and gravitas, should put their effort towards. And I think having an entry point from 10 to 9 is fitting a council of this calibre, and I support the concept, and I'm happy to vote in favour of it.
Thank you. Further contributions? Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm happy to endorse the positions outlined in this report. I believe this is a small step in the right direction for local government reform. The reduction in the number of councillors is sensible, and for Kingborough going from 10 councillors to 9 still leaves enough councillors to sufficiently represent our community. In regards to the increase in councillor allowances across the state, I guess to start with, one thing I can say for sure is I don't think many councillors, if any, take on this role for the allowance. It is generally people who want to make a difference in the community. However, I do believe that any rise in allowances such as this one has the potential to increase the quality and quantity of candidates that put their name forward. It's not going to be a full-time wage for many people, but with workplace flexibility these days more and more, people may look at this allowance and start thinking they can afford to reduce to part-time and commit X amount of hours to being a councillor. This, along with the superannuation payments and pay-as-you-go tax, I think are also very sensible additions. So, yes, I'm happy to endorse the report.
Thank you, Councillor Bain. Further discussion? If not, I'll make a small contribution before we move on. Look, I think this has come out of the local government reform that has been occurring across the state for many, many years now. And certainly out of that and the submissions that were received, there was a lot of feedback from the community and also from some councils and individual councillors across the state. That we have, well, we know we have too many councils in 29, but also you add up the number of councillors and that equates to, I think, 263 overall. So we are, for our size of population, quite over-governed. And unfortunately, the state government, rightly or wrongly, I won't make a personal judgment on that, but they made a decision about not having forced amalgamations between councils and having it voluntary. And unfortunately, whilst there are some active discussions going on in councils around the state, probably just a handful of them, about, and there's some of the smaller ones, about how they can work together either through formal shared resources or actually amalgamating, I don't think in the foreseeable future, without forced amalgamations, we're going to see a change. And so this is why the government came to the position that if we want to achieve, I guess, that reduction in numbers, because it's one of the highest number of councillors per person in Australia at the moment. And so it is very much, I believe, of the view that that's inefficient. And in some cases, and the report that the government released, the discussion paper that they released with this said that it can lead to undemocratic election outcomes where people with very, very few votes can end up being elected. And I think there was an example where, with multiple resignations from a small council, somebody was elected on a recount with about 20 votes. So there are some anomalies that the current system has thrown up. It is interesting that moving forward there are reforms and some of that has already occurred, and in our upcoming, I'm talking in relation to professional development for councillors, and in our upcoming annual report you'll see we are now, as councils, have to report the individual results of which councillors have undertaken the training modules that are available to us. There's been quite a selection of modules, and it starts from the very beginning of things like what is your making sure that councillors understand what their role is as a councillor, what their responsibilities are, and then it takes councillors through various modules, and there's quizzes and things like that on topics like risk management and ethics and integrity and financial management and all the different things that you need to be across as a councillor, because the role of a councillor now is significantly different than it was 30 or 40 years ago. It is very, very complex, as the legislation that we operate under has become more complex. So I guess that brings with it a need to have a certain ability to be able to learn those new things if you don't have those skills already, and so there is this mandatory training that is coming in, and I think that's a very positive thing, and I'm very pleased to see that we have had all of our councillors who have, if not completed it, then have actually made a substantial start on it, and I thank councillors for that and their willingness to continue to learn so that we can strive to do the best that we can for the community that we serve. So I do support this. I was on council prior to 2013, when we went from 12 members who sat around the table, and at that election in 2013 we went down to the 10 that we are now. I reflect on that and think, did it make our decision making any worse because we had two less people around the table? I don't believe so. I don't believe it will result losing one more member through this. I don't think it will result in a lessening of our good decision making. I do know from having listened to some of the smaller councils where they only have, will be going down to 5 members, there could be some challenges that they face, and I know the state government has responded to some of those and said they're very aware of some of the nuances that they could have in relation to quorums and that they will take that on board. But I do believe this is very sound, so I do support putting in a submission in line with what is printed in the agenda. So I thank council staff for the work that they've done on this. Are there any further contributions? Councillor Midgley, would you like to sum up? No? I'll put the recommendation now. It's moved by Councillor Midgley and seconded by Councillor Bain. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? No. Okay, a show of hands is required. All those in favour? It's Councillors Antoli, Dean, Bain, Midgley, Street, Blade Wright and Reet. And those against? Councillor Fox. The motion is carried. We now move to page 47, Kingborough Council Strategic Plan, with a recommendation on the following page. And I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. I've got a mover in the Deputy Mayor and a seconder in Councillor Fox. Deputy Mayor.
Thank you, Mayor. The purpose of this report is to endorse the draft Kingborough Strategic Plan. This was prepared with input from councillors and staff, and we also considered community feedback as well as any proposed amendments to the draft. It's a great plan. It sets out our objectives, our values, our vision and purpose, and there are 5 strategic priorities. It will be formally launched at our annual general meeting in December. So I commend the motion and I encourage everyone to have a read.
Thank you very much. Further contributions? Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. You can hear me. Thank you, Mayor. I'd like just to thank all the people involved in development of this strategic plan, the consultant and the staff, and also thank the... I think we had quite a high number of people in regards to responding to the consultation as well. So I really thank them for their time and input into that as well, so that we know that it is a bit of a community voice and input into this. A lot of the things that I recognised in this area, and I support absolutely the aspects of this, and on last Monday night we did have a workshop in regards to that. I noted that in the consultation that there was a really strong climate
conversation and focus as well, and the importance that is reflected throughout the document. One thing that I did not raise at the workshop was a matter, and I had to look through some notes, that in on the 8th of July in 2019, Kingborough Council passed a motion that we recognise that we're in a state of climate and biodiversity emergency that requires urgent action by all levels of government, including local governments. And the other part of this motion stated that this declaration of climate biodiversity emergency is included in Council's strategic plan and annual report. And after then rereading that, I did note that we hadn't actually included that in this strategic document. So therefore, I would like to propose an amendment that includes this wording, and I have had a conversation with staff in regards to that.
So you would like to...
So I'd like to add...
So you're proposing an...
Proposing an amendment.
Okay, and do we have the... Ms Jones, do you have the... We'll just wait to get that... You can speak... Say it out loud while we get that up on the screen.
Basically, it would just be a change in the wording on 3.4, and that includes the recognising that we are in a state of climate and biodiversity emergency as per the motion that was passed in 2019. And I think that also then gives the sentiment of the number of people who were engaged, putting, you know, climate at the forefront, and the fact that Council has actually agreed to this and stated that we would do this. And my apologies to my fellow councillors that I didn't bring this up at the workshop. So that is the one, is it down the bottom there? The amendment? Yep, so the amendment down the bottom. I get glasses, but I only need them for reading. It's a real
I know, but I'm in the same world of pain.
So the amendment is basically would go to whatever the original, what's the original amendment?
So you're wanting to change the wording to section 3.5 to read implement 3.4. Council's, 3.4, sorry, implement Council's climate change plan which acknowledges a climate, so you're adding the words
adding
which acknowledges
the words in bold.
A climate and biodiversity emergency, and then the rest of it. So I'm going to, before we go any further, do I have a seconder for that? Councillor? I will get to that. Yes, I should do that first. Beg your pardon. Who moved it? Councillor Gladright, would you be happy with that amendment? And Councillor Fox, is it acceptable to you? Okay, so that now becomes part of the substantive motion. Yes, you can now speak to, well, it's you now speaking to the whole.
Yep, so I guess
plan.
As I've discussed, you know, supporting absolutely all the objectives and points in the strategic plan. But I did recall that we did pass this motion in 2019, and we did state very clearly at that motion that we would include this in Council's strategic plan and annual report. That was stated in the minutes from the meeting. And so, therefore, that is why it is included. And I feel that it does then give the sentiments of much of the consultation also, where people raised you know, climate as a concern and wanted to ensure that it was elevated and made a point. So it is just following up on something that was passed at Council in 2019, and I hope that, yeah, we can include this important statement.
Thank you. Councillor Street, and then the Deputy Mayor.
The strategic plan as it stood before that amendment was a document that had been established after a lot of work and consultation and a lot of work between councillors and well, regarding discussion about that consultation and the form that the strategic plan took. What has just occurred is that a motion from a previous formation of council has been taken by three members of this council and an addition added that was not discussed during that consultation with councillors in any way, shape or form, which changes the tenor of the document's approach to climate change and biodiversity. And I'm seriously unhappy with my colleagues who have chosen to do that. By doing that, three of them have effectively amended this document such that the only choice that I have in order to voice my concern with that change having been made is vote against the strategic plan, which is not a step that I want to take, but I want to flag that it is one that I am going to take if the amendment remains.
Thank you. Just to clarify, well, the amendment was accepted by the mover and seconder of the motion, so it is the substantive motion now, so it is included in the recommendation. I've now got the Deputy Mayor and then Councillor Antoli.
Thank you. Look, I'm happy to support this. Councillor Midgley acknowledges that she didn't pick this up in time and that she has expressed that she would have liked the opportunity to discuss this at the workshop. I know it's not ideal. I take your point. I feel that this has previously been debated. We're not really debating biodiversity emergency again tonight. We're just ensuring that it remains in our strategic plan, which was a previous decision of council.
Thank you. Just before I call on Councillor Antoli, Councillor Street, just for your information, it is within your purview. Would you like to? You can move an amendment to the substantive motion as it stands at the moment, and you can do that at any time.
Mayor, and the amendment is that the wording that the mover and seconder have accepted as being added is removed.
Okay, do I have a seconder for that? Councillor Antoli? Okay, would you like to speak to the amendment? Anybody else like to speak to the amendment? Councillor Antoli.
Thank you very much, Mayor, and I do support Councillor Street's common sense approach. As I understand it, we have not received a weight of evidence from the community when we consulted on our strategic plan that Kingbra, the Local Government Association of Kingbra, for which this strategic plan is being voted on, is in the midst of any climate emergency. No evidence has been produced at any of the workshops to say Kingbra is in a climate emergency of any description. I note our good friend Bill Gates over the weekend said that we are not going to die due to a climate emergency. He actually said that the richer nations will be able to adapt and we will do fine. The mood is definitely not in favour of this emotion, and I don't appreciate a motion that comes from a political party to be where philosophy comes from a particular political party is inserted into our strategic document, because it forces us to spend money where it does not need to go. So I do not believe that this change or amendment should be supported in any way. If it is allowed into the substantive, I also will take the difficult choice of voting against the strategic plan amendment in its entirety, because I believe this is a poison pill for me. I'm not swallowing it, and I don't believe the ratepayers of Kingbra should be swallowing it either, because if we go ahead and fund dealing with a climate emergency for a particular small piece of the climate that we live in, which will do nothing to the global climate, we have ripped our ratepayers off, and we'll be asking them for a lot more than 6%, 6.5% this coming year to fund this ridiculous concept.
Further contributions. I've got Councillor Bain and then Councillor Fox.
Can I just ask a question? In reference to where we're saying which acknowledges the climate and biodiversity emergency, does the plan itself, the climate change plan, already encapsulate that? And are we essentially referring to something that's already in the plan?
The CEO. Not through me.
I'm just gonna double check the wording within the plan. It's my understanding that it does already do that, but I'll double check that for you.
I'll ask a follow up question while that's been.
Absolutely, Councillor Bain.
Is there anywhere else in the strategic plan where we reference a plan and then expand on information that's already in the plan.
That almost sounded like a yes, Minister question. But
to my knowledge, there isn't anywhere else in the plans that sort of alludes to content within another plan or strategy. However, I would need to double check by reviewing the whole draft strategic plan for that.
Have you got another question, Molly, just to fill in the time or a tune you can share with us or something?
Yes, all I can say is for those reasons, I feel like I'm leaning towards supporting the current amendment, because I think it's calling out, we're referencing a document and then calling out something additional. So the information's already in the document we're referring to, so there's no need to emphasise it when we're not doing it anywhere else in the plan.
I'm just trying to look at the plan as well to assist the CEO. I might ask Councillor Midgley if she's aware of, since you were the mover of the original motion, are you aware that this is already in the Climate Action Plan?
Yeah, sorry, I don't know if it's actually clearly stated. I'm just going on that motion that was passed, and I looked at the wording of that, and so therefore it was referenced in the last strategic document. And I guess I've got a question to that, just in regards to what Councillor Antoli said. It was referenced in the last strategic document because of that 2019 motion, so therefore did that then become a big expense to Council?
Sorry, the CEO's... Did you hear that question?
Trying to multitask.
Yeah. I just did a word search. I can't find it.
Yeah, so to my cursory review of the Kingborough Council Climate Change Plan, it doesn't allude to the climate and biodiversity emergency. I think that was done via separate... resolution of council that we this council acknowledged that emergency. As it relates to the question, I think I was asked, but I was doing something else at the time. The question on cost, do you mind clarifying that for me?
Sorry, yes, so it's just in regards to the point made by Councillor Antoli that by putting this statement in would therefore become a big impost cost-wise to our ratepayers, when noting that has actually already been our current strategy. So any comments in regards to that, please?
Thanks for the question. So the strategic plan is the broader guidance for the organisation, outlining key outcome areas, I guess, that the organisation will deliver to. Beyond that sits a number of implementation plans, fundamentally, about how the organisation will respond and subsequent budgets as well. So there's a number of decision-making frameworks that then sit below the strategic plan, where councillors make decision around the allocation of budgets, albeit that sits under the auspices of the strategic plan. You're right in saying that council's acknowledgement of a climate and biodiversity emergency is within the current Council strategic plan, that this document would supersede, and there are, I guess, within our various plans, such as the climate change plan, initiatives that are undertaken within that area. So that's a long way of saying that it doesn't directly tie council to new expenditure within this area, but it creates the sort of framework for ongoing expenditure in our work around addressing predominantly adaptation to climate change, but also elements of mitigation as well.
Councillor Dean, you can speak while I just quickly have a conversation.
Sure. I didn't think that reading the agenda tonight would be discussing climate change emergencies, noting that that was a motion back in 2019, and I have looked at the climate change plan from 2019 to 2024. And it just doesn't. It's what we're discussing here is a subclause which acknowledges a climate and biodiversity emergency. That plan doesn't. The emergency comes up four times in terms of emergency management. It just doesn't acknowledge a climate and biodiversity emergency. The plan that, as it's written, it's an infactual statement. If we want to discuss the climate change emergency, a notice of motion will be brought. But I was happy to support the report or the plan, as read in the agenda. So that's what I'll be doing.
Thank you. I did hear all that. I'm a female. I can do. I can multitask. it's a particular skill that some of us have. Look, just in relation to this, just for some clarity, I just wanted to check with the CEO. The issue with the amendment as it stands at the moment, or sorry, not the amendment, but the wording that was put into the substantive motion, reads, implement Council's climate change plan, which acknowledges a climate and biodiversity emergency, integrating mitigation, blah, blah, blah. The problem is the existing climate change plan, the 2019 to 2024 plan, which is to be updated, those words don't appear in that plan. So, in fact, the words that are being put in there are incorrect, that we agreed, that the mover and seconder of the motion agreed to amend, put in there, are not factual, if I can put it like that, because that statement doesn't appear in the current climate change plan. We, as you know, we are going to be updating this plan, but we can't amend our strategic plan at this late hour and preempt what might be in the next iteration of the climate change plan by suggesting that we might still be acknowledging that in a new plan, if that makes sense. So, sorry, that was an awkward way of trying to explain that. So, any further discussion on Councillor Street's amendment? No? Councillor Street, did you want to sum up? Okay. All right, so I'm going to put the amendment. It's moved by Councillor Street and seconded by Councillor Antoli. And just to be clear, the amendment is the amendment is that the words that which acknowledges a climate and biodiversity emergency be removed from the recommendation. No? The amendment that we're now dealing with is to remove the words, isn't it, from the... Oh, okay. All right. So basically... Well, effectively what Councillor Street is... So that was exactly what you moved, Councillor Street?
To the original.
But did you actually, sorry, just going back.
What I moved was, that the words that were added to the recommendation by the mover, mover and seconder be removed.
Yes, so that's what I thought.
That would take us back to that council endorses the attached Kingborough strategic
plan 2025-26. That's where I was going with that.
Yep.
So what we're voting on at the moment is that the Councillor Street's amendment, which is to remove the words that were added earlier so that in effect, the recommendation reverts back to the original one, which is that Council endorses the attached Kingborough Strategic Plan 2025-2035. Just so we're all clear on that. Okay? So I'm going to put the amendment. It's moved by Councillor Street and seconded by Councillor Antoli. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Okay, show of hands is required. All those in favour? Is Councillors Antoli, Fox, Dean, Bain, Midgley, Street and Reet, and those against? Councillor Gladright. The amendment is carried, so it means we're back to the substantial motion. So the motion that we're talking about now is that Council endorses the attached Kingborough Strategic Plan 2025-2035. I haven't kept a record of who has spoken substantively, so I'll rely on your honesty. Who would like to make a substantive contribution on the strategic plan? Don't wait too long or the opportunity will pass you by. Okay. You did make a substantive contribution, but you can ask a question should you wish to ask a question.
I will ask a question.
Thank you.
And I can hope that we can include that perhaps in the... we can include the statement that I presented, which was a motion that was passed by Council, in the next Kingborough Climate Change Plan. And I guess I'm hoping that we can... ask staff to consider this in moving forward.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley.
That's my question. Can we?
Oh, can we? Mm. Sorry. Very clever. You turned a statement into a question. The CEO.
So we are about to commence the development or the redevelopment of the climate change plan because, as you've noted, the previous one is out of date as of 2024. The development will include current data, evidence, state and federal strategies within that. It will include consultation within it. So there's the opportunity through the redevelopment of that plan to include any comments that the Council wishes around declaring or acknowledging a climate and biodiversity emergency.
Thank you. Councillor Midgley?
One more question. Can, as that statement was passed in that motion, can that statement still be included in the annual plan?
The CEO.
We would need to look at specifically how the annual plan is developed and in terms of what... context it links to, but yes, words can be included within the strategic plan at Council's discretion. In the annual plan, apologies, around climate and biodiversity emergency at Council's discretion.
Thank you. Just one further
Councillor Midgley.
One further question. So I guess this provides an example of a motion that clearly stated that this is to be put in Council's annual plan and strategic plan, but yet we missed that opportunity. How, and with changing of councils and staff, how do we keep track of such motions that are passed at Council? This was quite a significant one, and would I say that the gallery was full of supporters?
The CEO.
The previous resolutions are tracked through our information management, and so that's how we generally try and stay across previous resolutions to make sure that they're brought into effect. With resolutions of the sort that you're referencing, one of the challenges is that it's unclear whether or not they relate to just the subsequent strategic plan and annual plan, or whether they relate to all future strategic plans and annual plans that come from that point. So in the development of these new plans, it involves public consultation and engagement, and obviously a lot of work with councillors to ensure that they're fit for purpose, and subsequent councils are able to choose to adopt content in those plans and strategies that they so wish. So I guess there's a couple of things in here about firstly making sure that we're clear in the recommendations and resolutions of council to make sure that they are clear about whether they apply to the subsequent version of those plans or in perpetuity, and then also make sure that that's part of consideration in the development of documents. But I do note that it's each subsequent council's decision-making that can guide what content it chooses to put in place within those documents.
Councillor Midgley, anything further? Any further contributions? Councillor Fox.
This whole thing of climate change emergency, I note that Councillor Street said it was party driven.
Councillor Antolli made that statement.
Tony, I don't see, I'm not a member of any party, but I do know that Kingborough does have incredible responsibilities in terms of climate change and in terms of protecting our community from fire and flooding, sea level rise, all sorts of things that we have to deal with. And it might not be seem an emergency, but I do know that we're losing a lot of our wildlife and a lot of our bird life. It's just, and development is also contributing to that loss. It's acknowledged that our weather patterns are completely unpredictable. There are so many more hot days in winter and cold days in summer. We are really struggling as a community to deal with these issues, and I do think it's very important that Council does acknowledge that we are in a precarious position. It may not be an emergency, but we are continually getting further and further down the path of looking like an emergency. So I do recognise the fact that Councillor Midgley has raised this issue, and I think it's a very important issue. And I also understand that perhaps this matter wasn't debated during the consultation phase of our strategic plan, but I think it is very much in the forefront of a lot of people's minds from all persuasions and all political parties. So I do think we should take this situation very, very seriously. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Oh, that prompted a raising of hands. In the order that I saw them, Councillor Dean, then Councillor Bain, and then Councillor Antolli. Councillor Dean.
Well, I wasn't actually going to make a contribution, but the debate seems to have been skewed towards talking about a climate change emergency. And just to provide a bit of balance here, I just want people that are listening to this document here is not just that, not just about our climate or just one thing. It is a broad, long-term strategy and vision which talks about really important things, and the key for me is the purpose, and it's making Kingborough a great place to live, and I think that's what we all aspire to. And just to remind everyone, that is what we're about, to have clean, you know, clean parks, great roads, playgrounds and sporting facilities and everything that comes with living in this place, a place that you can raise a family, and that's what we want to have, to be still the best place in Tasmania to raise a family. I think Kingborough is that. So I wasn't going to make a contribution. I just didn't want the focus to be on one small thing, because this is a very long document, and if you do happen to have a copy once this is passed, to just look at the summary page, because it will give you a good idea of what this is about. It's very, very broad, it's long-term, and I do support it, and I think it's a great document. So thank you to all the staff for putting it together.
Thank you, Councillor Dean. Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. I was thinking exactly on the same lines as Councillor Dean, actually. I just wanted to say something positive about this plan, and also to thank all the staff and everyone involved in putting it together, because it is quite a major exercise, and I think the final product is fantastic. Strategic plans don't tend to be exciting documents for a lot of people, but they are very important, and in our case, it's going to be the guiding document the Council refers to over the next 10 years when trying to achieve our goal, which, as Councillor Dean said, is trying to make Kingborough a great place to live. I think it's fantastic that we've had staff feedback, ratepayer feedback, and councils involved in putting it together. So a lot of different opinions all combining into one document. And I believe the five strategic priorities are spot on, and I think they nicely encapsulate the broad range of strategic objectives that we've mapped out. So I look forward to utilising over the next 10 years to make Kingborough a great place to live.
Thank you, Councillor Bain. Councillor Antolli.
Thank you, Mayor. Look, pretty much the previous two speakers beat me to it. Good on them. I want to thank the staff for the effort. Strategic plan is a compliance imperative. It is required under the Local Government Act. It's an important document. The fact that it is required means it is an important document, and it has to be all-encompassing, and that's tough. We do need to have a filter. And we need to, our CEO and his team, or whoever, if it was a she, her team, it doesn't matter, our CEO and their team need to know what direction are they meant to be steering this ship over the next foreseeable 10 years. And It really is around the basics of what we need to make ourselves a great place to live. And I'm very grateful that we've steered the discussion back to common sense here, and I am happy now that that motion was successfully moved by Councillor Street to vote in favour of this and thank the staff for the efforts.
Thank
you. And they know who they are, so we thank them.
Thank you very much, Councillor Antoli. Just for my comments, thank you for those who have just spoken. I was going to sort of... I appreciate what Councillor Midgley was attempting to do with the motion, but I think we can move forward on that in another way. So it is good to be able to sort of focus back on the whole of this strategic plan, because I think that it has... It does have the essence in it of what it is that we value as a group of councillors and as a council. And just for the information of the community, this was developed over many, many months. We had feedback from councillors ourselves, from council staff, from other stakeholders, community groups through the Kingborough Community Forum that comprises of about 15 or 16 different community groups that are represented, as well as going out to the general public through a community engagement process. So we have had a lot of feedback from a broad range of people in the development of this, and that did, at the current strategic plan, we have four values that we had enshrined in that, and now we've moved to a fifth one. So our values under this one are accountability, collaboration, equity, innovation and sustainability. And we've gone from three different priorities that we had to support it to five. As has previously been stated, there are a number of mechanisms, and there's a very good graphic on this on page 7 of the strategic plan, which highlights the different things that we're required to do in a legislative context, but how the strategic plan is, I guess, the starting point, and all of the other things like the annual plan and all of the legislated strategies, our four-year service delivery plan and our annual operational plans. And I know that all sounds like a lot of bureaucratic words, but all of those things feed in, and there is a process. And it does mean that through our annual operational plan, that's where we have some of the more specific items and strategies that we articulate that will assist us in meeting the objectives of the strategic plan. And then they are reported on every year in our annual report. So hopefully that provides some clarity around the process, because it can seem very confusing. I would like to thank the people who did engage and provide feedback to the draft strategic plan, because the report, the engagement report is included in the agenda, and it does show the response that the staff made recommendations to us as councillors, and we workshopped. So through that process, when people do give us that feedback, we take it on board, and there were a number of changes that were made to the plan, things that we that we included, we clarified, and we changed the wording of things to try and respond to that feedback. So thank you to those people who did it. Thank you to the staff who have been assisting us with this, and I thank councillors for their contributions. Are there any further contributions? No? If not, I will ask the original mover of the motion, who was the Deputy Mayor. Would you like to sum up? No, not in the summing up. No. All right. No summing up required, so I'm going to put the motion. It's moved by the Deputy Mayor and seconded by Councillor Fox. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? The motion is carried unanimously. It takes us to page 104, Land Transfer, Kingborough Sports Precinct, with a recommendation on page 106, and I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Somebody needs to move it. Councillor Dean, move Councillor Dean, seconded Councillor Bain. Thank you, Councillor Dean.
Just in terms of a quick nutshell, what we're here looking at is, I think everyone in the community would be aware of the High Performance and Training Centre that is being proposed to be built by the AFL. In order for that to happen, this is obviously going to be built in the Kingra Sports Centre precinct, or Kingra Sports precinct, sorry. And for that, in order to happen, we need to, we are now going to hopefully just indicate our intention of disposal for that land, and the preferred option is for that to be a long-term lease, while the report points out that the club's first option was for it to be directly transferred to the ownership of the club. We have held firm in terms of going for a long-term lease that retains in our hands. So as moving forward, if this is passed, the intent disposal will go ahead, and I think we could probably spend all night waxing lyrical about how great this sports high performance centre will be for our area, but the report does a pretty good job of that, and I think we're all aware, given everything that's happening with the politics of the football team in Tasmania, all of that aside, this is going to be fantastic, and I'm very happy to move this, and I hope that everyone will support this with me.
Thank you, Councillor Dean. Councillor Midgley, and then Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. I believe the recommendation is the best in regards to the risk appetite and also for the community, but I've just got a couple of questions. I'm wondering why we're moving forward with this when it has not, I guess, the big picture of the stadium hasn't had the final golden tick by the state government.
Why are we moving forward with it? Well, the state government has lodged a development application for the High Performance Centre and has funded it. And if they've lodged a development application, we need to resolve the question of the land tenure and how that land is treated, so we continue to move on.
Thank you. Just noting some...
Councillor Midgley, see, if I don't say your name before you speak, then your microphone doesn't go up. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Just noting some community members have asked some questions regarding this as well, so putting those forward. So also just wondering why we're moving forward when we haven't sort of received the final, I guess, budget part of this project for Kingra, all these question marks in regards to whether we're getting the, you know, is it going to be all fully funded? Like, what's the... Yeah, do we know what's being funded, what's not? I guess some just questions around that as well.
Okay. There is a state budget being brought down on Thursday, and we expect that there will be a funding commitment within that for the additional works that need to be carried out in terms of extra ovals for community use, and also then to replace the associated infrastructure that exists that has to be relocated, and some roadworks as a result of this. But we need to be very clear that what we're talking about here is the land on which the AFL High Performance Centre, or as it's more commonly known now that we're in the stages, the Training and Administration Centre. The funding for that has been provided in previous budgets, so there is funding there, which is why this is progressing.
Thank you.
Councillor Midgley.
Can I also just have perhaps some more information from staff in regards to the asset depreciation?
The CEO. Not through me.
Thanks for the question. Can I just clarify, first of all, that this resolution is to advertise Council's intent to dispose of the land through a long-term lease. So at this stage, it's not actually signing a lease, and that it goes to public advertising and then comes back to Council. So there's still subsequent decision points for the organisation around this process. In terms of depreciation of the built asset, because a long-term lease is being proposed beyond the useful asset life of the built asset, it is deemed to be something that is not on Council's books, so therefore Council will not be carrying that that asset on our books or be liable for depreciation, which is why this model is being recommended, and we've had independent advice from an accounting firm on that as well.
Nothing further, Councillor Midgley. I think I had Councillor Fox next.
I think the CEO has already answered my question partially, but I'm looking at the lease and it's saying long term, and I'd like to know roughly how long and what would be the situation if there's a change. I mean, long term leases are, you've got to have long term use, and if there's a change of use or a change of intention, what would happen to this property under that lease?
The CEO.
So the indicative lease, and at this stage it is just indicative because there's still a process to go through, that we've talked about is a 99-year lease in favour of the Tasmanian Football Club. If there was a change of use or intent around the land, or something happened like the club no longer being in the AFL, what we've discussed with the state government and with the Tasmanian Football Club is that lease would revert to the state government. So the lease would pass over in that case, that it was no longer being used by the footy club for the purposes of an AFL high performance centre to the state government. The reason for that is twofold. First of all, because it protects the state's investment into the facility, so the state is investing millions of dollars into the development of the facility and it protects their investment. Secondly, it means that the asset wouldn't revert onto council's books and that we get a surprise financial shock by suddenly having a $100 million facility sitting on council's asset register and then suddenly being liable to depreciate it. So the intent is that if that was to happen, it passes across to the state, then we would be in a conversation with the state around any subleasing that they would do to a future use, and we would have the ability to input and control that conversation. So that way we've protected Kingborough's interests, the financial interests of our community, but also maintained a level of control and also supported the state in protecting their investment into the facility.
Any further contributions? Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. I do, reinforce what the CEO said, this is just a first in a multi-point step to advertise to the community to get their input on us transferring the land through a lease arrangement to the AFL team. I'm an out and proud supporter of the team, the stadium at Macquarie Point, and probably in some ways most excited about having the high performance centre, the training centre right here. It's going to be fantastic. My personal hunch is that $55 million input that's mentioned in the report is underrated, and I think over time it'll definitely increase. I know the community is excited by it, not everyone, and I'm not a mad AFL fan. I'm of Italian and Croatian extract, so I prefer soccer, but I have a non-partisan interest in this for the greater good of our community and also for, you know, even the wealth of this council. It will bring rates and income and prominence and prestige to this council, and all of those things work for me. So I'm happy to support this first step, and then the community can get their chance to give input and feedback.
Thank you, Councillor Antoli. Any further discussion? Just to reiterate, as has been said, we are certainly giving the opportunity for the community to have their say in relation to this, as we follow the process that is required for all disposal of land, whether that be through sale or lease, which is also regarded as disposal. Councillor Dean, would you like to sum up? No, I'll put the recommendation in. Moved by Councillor Dean, seconded by Councillor Bain. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? The motion is carried unanimously. Takes us to page 110, enforcement policy, with a recommendation on the following page. And I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved Councillor Bain, seconded Councillor Midgley. Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. So the enforcement policy we have in front of us, the three objectives of this enforcement policy are to provide consistency in enforcement actions in matters of non-compliance, to ensure transparency, procedural fairness and natural justice principles are applied, and to ensure that enforcement response action is proportionate to the alleged offence in each case. Obviously, Council also has a lot of legislation that underpins the majority of these enforcements and mandates a significant amount of what we must undertake. This policy was created in 2016, reviewed in 2020, and there's been minimal changes. So I'm happy to support the recommendations and to endorse the policy.
Thank you. Councillor Fox and then Councillor Antoli. And is that a hand up or just a pen? Yeah, no, that's okay. Councillor Fox and then Councillor Antoli. If this was an auction, you would have bought a house by now. Councillor Fox.
I support the policy, and I know that there are not many changes in the actual original document. But I guess reading this, it sounds very draconian, and I don't see anything in this policy that would give us any flexibility or lenience or compassion, even in special circumstances. And I'm wondering how that is dealt with by staff when we have a policy that is so rigorous.
Mr. Smee, could you assist us with that one, please?
Thank you, Mayor. Often with legislation, it is black and white, and there is simply no room for council to apply discretion, and I speak specifically in relation to our building compliance and our planning compliance, where we have a legislative requirement to enforce our planning scheme. We have a legislative requirement to enforce the Building Act, and we can suffer penalty if we don't. So in saying that, our staff do endeavour to work to achieve compliance in a compassionate manner, in a manner that seeks to be as flexible as we can within the framework of our policy. In relation to other pieces of legislation, and specifically in relation to our bylaws, there is a level of discretion that is available under this policy, and that discretion relates to the public safety test, environmental test, level of resourcing required, and any other circumstances that an officer may want to take into account in assessing whether enforcement action is necessary. And specifically in relation to our bylaws, we do act primarily with the public interest at mind, and I would like to think that includes staff acting as compassionately as they can within this framework.
Councillor Fox, anything further?
No, I do appreciate the response from Mr. Smee. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a question from page 114 of our agenda. It's around point 4.3.4, which is transparency. We have an insert of if appropriate. So the context is when remedial action is needed, council will explain why the action is necessary and, if appropriate, will provide advice on the process of seeking a review of or how to appeal against a decision. So my question is, when is it not appropriate to provide someone with advice on how to seek a review or appeal against a decision?
I asked that very question this afternoon. Mr. Smee.
Generally speaking, it would always be appropriate to provide that advice. However, there are instances where there is simply not a recourse available, and that's where it wouldn't be appropriate, other than to say that there isn't an avenue for third-party appeal or recourse available to the particular situation.
Thank you.
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. Sorry. So from my point of view, the concern about putting if appropriate creates, in my opinion, the misperception of discretion on behalf of the council officer that it is arbitrary as to whether or not the ratepayer will get advice on what transparency or what transparent next steps they have. My view would be that in all cases that they would be given advice on what review or appeal process there is, and as you said, Mr. Smee, if not, that has to be clearly articulated, because basically you're informing them of their rights, and I just cannot see why we would have the word if appropriate. I just believe it should be permitted, not discretionary, that they know in every single circumstance what their rights are for appeal, whether it exists, the pathway exists or not. So what avenue do we have through you, Mayor, of changing that wording to probably better reflect that concept?
Mr. Smee.
You would need to move an amendment that the policy be endorsed with the changes as you have outlined.
Okay. So with your permission, Mayor, I would like to move that we change the wording of that particular sentence to basically reflect that in all cases they will be told what their process for seeking review or how to appeal would be made. So words to that effect.
Can I make a suggestion to make it easier?
By all means, I'm open.
Why not just move to take out the words that have been inserted of if appropriate to return it to what it was?
Yep, perfect. I love it even better.
So, okay, so Councillor, who have we got here? Councillors Bain and Councillor Midgley, as the substantive movers in the motion, do you agree with the proposed amendment?
Yep.
Councillor Bain, as the mover, you're in agreement. Councillor Midgley? Yes, you're in agreement. Okay, so, right. So, the words in 4.3.4 on page 114 of the agenda, the words, if appropriate, that have been inserted on the tracked up version will be removed to return it to its previous version. If appropriate, that should say. Thank you. Okay, so that now becomes the substantive motion. Further contributions? No? Okay. Councillor Bain, did you want to sum up? Thank you. All right, I'm going to put the motion. It's moved by Councillor Bain. It's seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour? Against, motion is carried. Takes us now to Councillor Workshop Policy on page 126, recommendation on the following page. Looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved. Anybody? Councillor Street, you want to move that? Yeah, Councillor Street. Go on, you can do it. Councillor Street, seconded Councillor Midgley. Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. There's frankly not a great deal to say about the Councillor Workshop Policy. There's just
It's not because it's a bad policy.
It's not because it's a bad policy. I suppose the thing to say is that it suits its purpose very well. There are some changes. It's been updated.
I'm starting to regret that I asked you to move it down.
Thank you. You did force me into this. But look, it's an important part of Canberra Council's governance framework that we do have workshops, and it's important that we have a policy in place to determine how they're to run. And I commend the motion to Council.
Thank you. Perhaps I can provide some clarity and a contribution and just say there's only minor changes that have been done in this, just to update things like references to regulations that we operate under and changing terminology largely from the General Manager to the now title of CEO. Very little else has changed. I will note with some interest that I did go looking the other day when I saw this on here. I sought to have a look at other councils' workshop policies, and not many other councils actually have them, which I thought was interesting, because I wanted to, so that they obviously might just have guidelines or whatever, but they don't have clear policies that are outlined and available on their website for the community to understand what a workshop is and how it operates. And I believe that's where we're ahead of the others in this. I know there is some misunderstanding by people in the community sometimes when they accuse us of making decisions behind closed doors, and they try to make council workshops sound like cloak and dagger kind of things. They're not. This very clearly shows the processes behind workshops and the fact that we do not make decisions and take votes at workshops, but it is more an informal way of being able to have a discussion around the table between ourselves and staff or third parties who are assisting us with various subjects. So hopefully in future people might realise that we are being very open and transparent in the conduct of our workshops, and we do have a framework that provides us with that guidance. Are there any further contributions? Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. Back up everything you've said, and there are plenty of people around this table who would not permit us to make decisions at workshops and would be very upset and vocal if we did. So just to confirm everything you said, I have a question around 4.1. Councillor workshops are informal meetings of councillors. I suppose my question is around culture. They are informal meetings in that I believe... I'm trying to understand what does informal mean, because during the actual workshops I noticed that there's no, it's not a discussion backwards and forwards, free flow. We still have to work through the chair. That's reflected in the actual policy itself. So if you could maybe help even me understand the difference between what do we mean by informal. I have noticed that when I started, workshops were a bit more of a backwards and forwards discussion. Now they tend to be a bit more formal around we speak when we're called upon by the chair to speak. I'm not criticising. I'm just sort of trying to get some clarity about what is informal versus what I'm experiencing, that it tends to be actually more formal.
Well, I think the big challenge we have is with our new audio, and because we record workshops, and as we know, our new... audio system does require the chair to call on a person to speak so that their microphone volume is lifted up. So it does require that to pick it up, because we do commit to recording workshops, which is, I think, an important part of keeping record of them. Mr. Smee looks like he's going to assist.
Thank you, Mayor. I guess in its simplest form, council meetings are regulated by the local government meeting procedures, which makes them very formal. Workshops are not subject to those same meeting procedures, so in a way they are informal. However, I guess if the public was to view a workshop, they may well go, well, that was pretty formal. So it's in the eye of the beholder, the level of formality, but when you compare it to a council meeting that is regulated by prescribed procedures, they are certainly less formal.
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you. That's all from me on that one. I'll be definitely voting in favour of the minor changes.
Thank you. I think we do, just to add to that, I think we do endeavour to try and make it as informal as we can within the frameworks we have to operate in. Quite often, we don't call each other by our first names rather than by councillor such and such, so it is as relaxed as it can be, and I know there has been some hilarious banter during those, but I guess we still have to be mindful of the framework in which we work. Any further contributions? No. Councillor Street, would you like to sum up? Because you did such a great job at opening that.
It would be better for everyone if I didn't.
Yes, all right, thank you. I'll put the recommendation, moved by Councillor Street and seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried. Takes us to the next item. We're on page 136, Kingborough Bicycle Advisory Committee. Minutes of the 12th of September 2025 meeting with a recommendation on the following page. And I'm looking for a mover and a second. I've got a mover in Councillor Midgley and a seconder in Councillor Bain. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, I'll move this one, and I guess just to note a few points. The great thing about having a committee looking after a strategy action plan means that we have this governance over the great projects that the strategy has. It's not just a strategy that will sit on the shelf and we say, you know, we've got this great plan. We've got really something tangible to work towards, and for the staff budget as well, they've got tangible projects to work towards. And also with the funding that has been available, fingers crossed that it's we have the active transport funds in the state government, because that has funded a lot of projects in this strategy as well, and also federal funding as well. So I guess the KBAC wanted to have a review of the strategy, kind of check in how things are going, celebrate really as well the projects that have been completed. And if you look in the document, you can see that. And there has really been a significant progress made. And so at this point, I'd really love to give a shout out to the councillors, Councillor Bain, and also acknowledge Councillor Fox as well for her long time involvement on the cycling strategy, for the staff who have been really hard working on applying for grants to tick off these, you know, the amazing active transport paths that are growing, noting there is still a big long length, but also the people who commit and volunteer their time as well in attending the meetings and providing input. So, yeah, this is just kind of like a little bit of a, you know, look what's happened, let's celebrate the fantastic projects that we can actually physically see and physically have a go and ride on around our municipality, but also to note that, you know, there's lots of visions that we'd love to see in the strategy as well, and I guess namely the Huntingfield to Margate, you know, off-road shared path, which would be such a fantastic asset. And we know highlighted in media around the housing development when, you know, homes are built, wouldn't it be great? We can get people out of our cars and, oh, you know, and using active transport to get around to places. So, yeah, this is why the committee undertook this. And, yeah, just thank everybody involved.
Thank you very much. Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. Just to quickly back up what Councillor was saying, I've been on this committee for a few years now as the deputy chair, and the committee is so well run and getting some great outcomes for our community. And I guess the thing I want to emphasise is it's not just outcomes for cyclists, but if you look at what we're achieving, it's walkers, it's runners, it's dog walkers, it's people pushing prams, some of the shared paths that this group focuses on. It's just some fantastic outcomes for the whole community. So when you see KBAC, don't think just cyclists, think shared paths. You know, the connections to the park and ride is one of the ones here. The Argana Road shared path between Kingston and Blacklands Bay would be a great outcome for the community. As Councillor Midgley said, Huntingfield, Margate shared path, and between Huntingfield and Margate, that's been on Council's radar for a long, long time, and the outcomes for the community with that path would be just amazing. So, yeah, well done to this committee, and look forward to going through these actions with them.
Thank you very much, Councillor Bain. Any further discussion? I'll just echo, I don't want to keep us too long, but I just want to echo the comments that Councillors Bain and Midgley have made in relation to the work that KBAC does. I thank both the councillors for their the work that they do with the members of the community and our staff who are involved in this. It's a very committed group, and it's great to see that they've had some successes over many years in getting upgrades to infrastructure and securing grants from the state government and the like. So, greatly appreciated. Councillor Midgley, would you like to sum up? No, I'm going to put the recommendation. Move Councillor Midgley, second to Councillor Bain. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Takes us to appendices on page 152 with a recommendation on the same page. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Got a mover in the Deputy Mayor and a seconder in Councillor Antoli. Any questions on the appendices? We've got infrastructure works report, calendar and forward agenda. Nope. Okay. No questions, but I would just draw members of the community's attention to the Infrastructure Works Report. Sometimes these reports, when they're at the back of the agendas and appendices, they can go unnoticed, but it is basically a wrap-up of months and months of work that and maintenance work and upgrades and new builds that are part of our capital works program, and it does give a really interesting snapshot to show that there are many, many positive stories happening of how we're upgrading a range of our facilities, from roads and footpaths and community halls and access ramps and toilets and so on. And so I really would encourage people to have a look at that if they have not. Councillor Fox.
Yes, just to draw your attention to page 167 and the picture of the Kingston Beach foreshore works. I really appreciate the work that is happening along Kingston Beach, but I know that there have been committees and subcommittees and plans and long-term plans and short-term plans, and it all seems to be coming together, but I haven't recently seen an actual drawing or plan to show what the ultimate outcome is going to look like, and I was wondering if that could be made available to councillors, if it's available.
Mr. Mackey, I know you've been waiting for a question all night. Yeah. You're paying attention, so that's
I have
even
been
better.
Listening this time. yes, we can do that. We can make that available. We've got drawings and 3D renderings of the end outcome. We can make those available.
Councillor Fox.
Does that mean that councillors would need to come in to the council chambers and ask to see it here, or is it going to be available in other forms?
We can make them available to all councillors.
He can send them out.
Via email. Sorry.
That'd be fantastic.
Yep. Sorry.
I'll just interpret his words for you. Thank you. Any further questions? If not, I'm going to put the recommendation. Moved by Councillor Gladewright. Who seconded it? Sorry, I didn't write it down. Which lovely person put up their hand? Councillor Antoli seconded it. Thank you. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against, motion is carried unanimously. Page 152, notices of motion. At the time the agenda was compiled, there were no notices of motion that had been received. Takes us to confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session. In accordance with Regulation 17 of the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulations 2025, Council by absolute majority moves into closed session to consider the following items: confirmation of minutes, applications for leave of absence, naming rights, Lightwood Park. Mover and a seconder, please. Moved Councillor Midgley, seconded Councillor Gladewright. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried. That brings us to the end of the open session of Council. In accordance with the Council Meetings and Councillor Workshops Audio Recording Guidelines Policy, recording of the open session of the meeting will now cease. Thank you to our last member of the public who is with us. We do ask that you leave us now, but thank you for staying to the very end. Open session of Council will adjourn, and thank you also to those people who have been watching along at home. Good evening. The open session of Council adjourns at 7:42 p.m. Closed session of Council.